right after the war between the states. Anybody have any question about where I grew up? The Methodist Episcopal Church South was in disarray in Middle Tennessee. A number of the clergy had gone to either fight or be chaplains in the Confederate Army. Some had been killed. Many of the churches had been destroyed by the occupying forces. Some had been commandeered for other uses. For example, McKendree downtown was a hospital. All the pews were taken out. It was a hospital. The Methodist Episcopal Church, or as we called it, the Northern Church, you know, we had divided over that issue of slavery back in the 1840s, had come in with the occupying troops, and they were supplying pastors for some of those empty churches that the Southern Church could not supply. Needless to say, it was a very, very difficult situation. It was in that difficult situation that 5 years after the war had ended, McKendree downtown decided that there needed to be a congregation on the far western border of town. So they chose, it was called Belmont and Broad then, 16th and Broad, for that placement. They found the place, didn't have a building yet, but there was a pastor appointed 3 years later. His name was Fountain Pitts. Isn't that a great name for a preacher? Fountain Pitts. Now, in our day and time, when you're starting a new church, you usually send out your young, energetic clergy right out of seminary. He was not that. He was an old guy with a white beard, which to me seems he's pretty trustworthy. Actually, he was 2 years older than I am now. He was 65 when he was appointed to that church. But it wasn't his first assignment, of course. He had been licensed to preach at 16, born in 1808. Licensed to preach at 16. In his 20s, he had helped develop the first missionary effort from this conference to Latin America. He had been sent to look at different cities and had chosen Buenos Aires as the place where, for the very first time outside the United States, this conference would be involved in mission. When he was in his 30s, he helped found African-American congregations for the few free slaves and the slaves. One of those was called Andrew Church, predecessor to our own Clark United Methodist Church now. But it was also called Andrew Charge because right next to the African American church was a white church. During the war between the states, he was a chaplain in the Confederate Army. And when he came in 1873 to serve as the first appointed pastor of the newly formed West End Methodist Episcopal Church South, he lasted less than a year. He was appointed in October and died of pneumonia the following May. In his obituary, you will read that not only was he pastor of this fledgling congregation, he was also the chaplain at the prison. A remarkable man who planted the seed out of which this grew. We would not be here if it were not for McKendree deciding in the toughest of times that the way to respond to those difficulties and those hardships was to plant a church, a gift of hope to the future, and that they would send one of their most capable and experienced pastors to start that church. he didn't get to see the building. That didn't come along until the third pastor. They sent one to fill out that next year. And then Reverend Green came and helped build the church. The building that sat at 16th and Broad. But then when the border of Nashville grew further west and we decided we needed to build a big building there, then they started another church and moved that little building to Natchez Trace. The church was named after the man who gave the land, Blakemore, a member of this congregation. So just like McKendry birthed West End birthed Blakemore, and as I've said before on occasion, I may be the only pastor in the conference who has served two churches that started in the same building. And then, of course, as the city grew, we moved here, and here we are. And we are the beneficiaries of the faith of McKendry and Fountain Pits and the Tennessee Conference, that there were people who needed to have God's wide net of love cast over them. You heard the reading that Sean did, and you heard my little story. It's very familiar already. Jesus is walking by the Sea of Galilee. He sees these two brothers who are in the fishing business, Simon, who's later named Peter, and Andrew. He calls them, says, "I'll teach you how to fish for people." And I don't know if it was just if Jesus was that charismatic or they were a little curious about how you fish for people. But in either case, they followed immediately. A little further down, there were James and John, sons of Zebedee. They're mending the nets. He calls to them. They follow immediately. I've often wondered what Zebedee thought about that. He lost his workforce, right? It's such a weird image, this fishing for people, that a little bit later in Matthew has Jesus explain it. In the 13th chapter, among a whole series of stories that Jesus tells about the end times, he tells one about fishing. He says that we are to cast the wide net, to bring in all the fish that we possibly can, and that in the end times, the angels will be the ones who sort through the fish, select the good fish and the ones that need to be thrown back. That's not our job. Our job is just to cast the wide net of God's love for anybody who is in need of that love, willing to respond to that love, may not even know that they need that love. The judgment we leave up to God and the angels. I think that's what McKendry was doing when they planted that seed. They were casting that wide net to the very edges of Nashville at that time. And it just kept extending and extending. And here we are, caught in the net of God's love, every one of us, or else we wouldn't be here. But you know, there are lots of folks out there who, from life experience, believe that they are completely unlovable. Not even God could love them. And our job is to cast that net so that it includes them, so that they hear that message of God's love in a way that hopefully they can understand it. Because you see, we have a new net, don't we? Called the internet, right? And we're on Facebook, right? Some of us. I am. Yes, our communications director, Shelley Kuhlmeier, set me up several years ago, told me I was on Facebook, and taught me how to use it. I didn't have a clue. And so I just started posting things that seemed to be interesting to me. Things that were happening at the church, or things that would be thought-provoking, or things that might be comforting. After about a year, year and a half, somebody came to me and they said, "I really appreciate your Facebook ministry," and I didn't know I had one. I was just posting stuff I thought was interesting. But it is a ministry, what you do. Not just what we up here in robes do, what you do. As you cast that broad net across the world to let people know that they too are caught up in God's love. I see a lot of what you post, and you're doing exactly that already. We could do even more. Because you see, that's our calling. That's our job. To love God, love our neighbor as ourselves, and to love our neighbor as ourselves, it is to cast that net of God's love just as broadly as we possibly can. So that no one will escape knowing how deeply, how profoundly, and how steadfastly God loves them. We've been at that under this name for 140 years now. If you want to know more about that, you can read your booklet here done by our Archives and History folks who did a magnificent job. Lots more information there about that. If you can't, for some reason, come to the lunch, I hope you'll walk around and look at the displays, because that too will give you a sense of the history of this congregation and those persons who have been caught up in God's net of love through this congregation. But one of the things that folks have wanted for a long while has been a sign. Now, I thought we had never had a sign. But you know what? In those displays, I saw a picture of a sign. It's a little black sign with letters that you can change. And it was right out front here at one time. I don't know when. But we're prepared to put another one out there. We're prepared to put one that matches the church. That will be very beautiful. We have a matching gift of $30,000, which is half of what it will take to build that. And I have a feeling that it won't take long for that other $30,000 to come in, because a lot of you have been waiting for a sign for a long time. So people will know that this is not the engineering building at Vanderbilt University. Or even the School of Religion at Vanderbilt University, or even the chapel at Vanderbilt University, although we have a lot of Vanderbilt folks here. We are West End United Methodist Church. 140 years of casting God's net as broadly as we possibly can and calling people to grow closer to God, to grow into the image of Christ, to grow closer to each other. I can't think of a higher calling. May it be so 140 years from now.